Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our third and final hour on this Tuesday edition of the Hagman Report. And each and every Tuesday in hour number three, we are joined by Stan Deo from standeo.com.
Tuesdays with Stan.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a book?
Oh.
No. Stan Deo, how are you, sir?
Well, very good. Sitting here in dry ground, and my house is intact and not in pieces like people in Florida and Houston and the area down there. I think we're pretty good off here.
Oh, wait a second now. No, I was looking at the forecast. You're scheduled for fire and brimstone later tonight.
Oh, that's true. I forgot. How thoughtless of me. Yes, that's true.
I'm putting up
the metal shields now.
There you go. Well, it's so great to have you. I mean, you know, I was just telling us everybody, I'm just fired up tonight, man. So I'm ready for some Stan.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. How'd you go with Dane last night on the geoengineering?
Oh, it was really good. We covered a lot of ground and got some insight into his thoughts as to what are the factors contributing to a number of things we're seeing in the world with weather and the manipulation of weather.
Yeah, I talked with him probably 30-40 minutes yesterday afternoon before showtime, and you know, we've both seen a lot of stuff to, you know, about the ozone layer depletion. I mean, he was down in Australia about the same time I was for a visit, I think, and he was down there to feel the effects of the ozone layer depletion. I'll tell you, when that ultraviolet gets through the ozone layer, it's like needles sticking through your clothes. I mean, I was uncomfortable with the sun shining on my jeans. It really hurt. You had to get shade when that stuff was coming through the ozone hole. But we're going to see our share of it here eventually. And I know Dane says that, or the NASA guy he's talking with says that the majority of the problem with the sun is, not that the sun is overheating us, but the geoengineering is causing our the reflectivity of the planet, the libido, to change, and it's creating these tremendous storms and extremes and heat and cold. I tend to disagree a little bit with the guy from NASA because I can see, as you can too, that the sun at its lowest point in its solar cycle right now is not acting like it's in its lowest point. It's sending out coronal mass ejections. That one just clipped us a bit, not a serious one, but still noticeable, and it's coming around again toward the end of this month in the first 2 days of October. It's going to be pointing at us, and I am sure from what evidence I've gotten out of the U.S. Air Force in the past that there are new frequencies of ultraviolet being emitted by the sun, and that's not due to our climate change or the engineering of the planet. It's due to the sun. So you got that, and you got our geoengineering working together to create a nightmare of weather for the planet. And, you know, I'm pointing people to Dane's site here in my show images page, image 38. You can click on that on the text or the picture and get over to his site where he has a number of pages on the ultraviolet increase in the C-band. Now, the C-band, we normally have UVA and some UVB, but UVC kills bark on trees. He's already proven that in Northern California, and it's going to get worse. You don't want UVC band radiation to get you, but it's intensifying. And on one hand, I can applaud what Dr. Teller and the guys wanted to do with putting particulates in the upper atmosphere to reflect some of the solar energy and cool off parts of the planet to not allow this global heating to occur. Whatever the cause of global heating is, of course, but I do applaud the effort to try and stop that. But the problem is, all of us that are working on engineering a planet, you know, planet changes, not terraforming, but atmospheric changes, when we're doing that, we're doing it blindly, not knowing what the blueprint for planet Earth is. The Creator made it like a formula. Everything had to work in concert, you know, animals, vegetation, the seas and the atmosphere, everything had to work in concert together. So when we started pushing, a button here to put aerosols, particulates up in the upper atmosphere to try to fend off some of the increased solar activity, we did so blindly. And now then down the way, a few decades, we see, oops, that was not a good idea. And nobody wants to take credit for it, of course, but I applaud the attempt, but I am also a pragmatist, realizing that we're just kind of the blind leading the blind into trying to understand God's physics and science, and we're not doing a good job of it.
Yes, Dan, I think you're right. And, you know, something Dane mentioned yesterday is, you know, we see the global, the man-made climate change narrative being jammed down our throats, even, you know, with junk science. And Dane made the point that, you know, just when we see that, we can't just disregard the fact that there is warming going on. And as you always say, that it's not just the Earth, that the other planets in the solar system are experiencing this warming also. And trying to understand, you know, what the causes and what the effects are going to be. The media does it from this, you know, junk science point of view, where numbers are manipulated to push a narrative. But Dane really made some great points as to some of the dangers that we do face from some of what we see going on. And it's important to make sure we differentiate, you know, just because we don't believe in man-made climate change, that there isn't stuff going on with the climate.
Well, look, you know, I can also support the viewpoint that we should be reacting or, you know, living in our environment more efficiently, more, you know, wisely. You know, we're putting trash heaps out into the ocean that are forming islands of trash, and, you know, the life forms in the sea are ingesting it, you know, like the plastic that the oysters are getting into them. That's just one example. There's a lot of them. And, you know, we are just consuming resources with gay abandon to what the trash after we've consumed them does. The plastics, you know, just one example. And there doesn't seem to be a planetary authority which says, okay, you can't make this product because you haven't got a good way to dispose of it or put it back into the environment in a friendly, harmonic manner. And the sad thing is, even with a global government man-made that had the authority legally to do that, they're not going to be able to understand the formula that God created for this planet. And it's going to take the creator, the architect of our planet, to bring it back to right, to normal, you know, the way he'd set it up, where everything worked in harmony. And that's what's going to happen in the millennial reign of the Messiah, but in my opinion, you know, and what the Bible says.
Yeah.
However, yeah, we still need to wake people up about what's happening, and you know, not to go out without sunscreen and some kind of clothing protection in the sun for too long. Dane also has a bunch of color brochures he'll send you just free. Just go to his website, the Image 370, click on that and go to his engineering website, and he'll send you the stuff to spread out to pilots and friends and people who make a difference in the society around you to address this problem, to realize that the efforts by the tellers and everybody else to cut into the aerosol stuff have failed, and we need to personally take responsibility and get involved in trying to do the best we can to limit our impact on the environment. Sadly, one of the biggest impacts is the numbers of people living, just living and breathing and eating. And, you know, without birth control in some of the Asian countries and India and stuff, our population has grown to where it's no longer sustainable with our biosphere. Anyway, that's a huge argument, that, but anyway.
Okay, Stan. Well, jump into our next topic. We have a lot going on today. We have the 32-year anniversary of the earthquake in Mexico that killed over 5,000 people, and another earthquake that happened today that they're still pulling bodies out, and the death toll continues to rise. And then we also have the Hurricane Maria that is in the Atlantic as it's inching closer towards Puerto Rico. Where do you want to go, Stan?
Well, I think Maria is probably going to peter out and, you know, dissipate itself fairly shortly into the Atlantic. But the number of these hurricanes that just, you know, and the strength of them and the closeness to, you know, our east coast and to the Gulf, and also over the Mexican side on the southwest corner of North America, all these are rather, you know, remarkable. We've had a good run of some 10 years where we've had minimum hurricanes, but these have come back with a vengeance. And again, years ago, I've been telling people, because of the changes in the sun, at least that, we're going frequent rain, extreme heat, drought, and we're seeing that now, and it's going to get worse. It's going to, you know, polarize into various areas of the planet where they didn't have drought before, they're going to have it, and vice versa. The deserts will bloom, but, you know, in Israel, I suppose that's because they're going to get more rain than they used to, or than they're used to now, but they're going to get more to make it a green, you know, like, verdant country again. Look at our earthquake images for today at slide 43. I took that for the last 11, 12 days to show the earthquakes around the planet that were, you know, from Richter 1 up. And you can see certainly there's a cluster of them in southern Mexico there. And the one they're saying is Mexico City was actually a little bit south of that, Puebla. But you'll notice that the Aleutian chain up near Alaska, very, very busy. Even Hawaii is very busy. And, of course, Mauna Loa is on the verge of erupting again. They think it'll probably be a magmatic, you know, flow eruption rather than, you know, some huge, you know, like life-extincting event or something on the island. But it is a problem. It's chewing up some property around Mauna Loa already. You can see it in the news releases. And then in South America, Chile, Argentina, Peru, on the coast there, we're seeing some, you know, in the last 11 days, we're seeing some significant quakes there. Now go back to the show images page, image 44, where we zoom in on just the United States and Mexico, so you can see this, the earthquake separated better. And you can see the one that was happening on the 8th of this month down there, that Richter 8 plus over in the southern tip of Mexico, offshore. Now, you can see in this image, if you click on it and enlarge it, you can see a red line that is a plate tectonic border that comes underneath where that earthquake occurred in Mexico, or, you know, outside of Mexico, out in the sea. And that red fault line goes up toward the Baja, but it doesn't connect yet. In this area here, in Mexico and the Baja, and there, mainly more in Mexico and part of Honduras, we see three tectonic plates that are converging and creating pressures that, you know, it takes a genius to figure out where they're going to go. Now, the on the right side there, that red line goes up the Gulf of Honduras, and that's where the Caribbean plate, Caribbean Ocean type thing, Caribbean plate is pushing up against the Cocos plate, but the Cocos plate and the Pacific plate are spreading apart. So you've got a plate on the right, the Caribbean one, pushing the Cocos pushing back at it, and this is causing an uplift all along the west coast of Central America and Mexico. Now, if the Cocos plate does join the one coming down through the Gulf of California, as you can see that red line coming down there, if it does join that, then we may see activity along the Imperial Fault Line, which joins the San Andreas Fault, and could be rather interesting. But right now, the pressure release is south of there in the mountain ranges in Puebla, Mexico, and offshore there near Oaxaca, where that one was about 11 days ago. It does indicate to me that we're seeing increased seismic activity in the northern in North America, and that we should, as always, be prepared if we live in areas that are earthquake prone to deal without power and water. In fact, I'll get onto that thing in Houston in just a minute on that, what Harvey did to Houston. I did read where a bunch of the Hollywood notables, you know, the stars, got excited when they had a 3.5 earthquake in L.A. here yesterday. And, you know, I'm thinking a 3.5, heck, I've been in one of those, no big deal. But they're running around like scared little hens saying, is this the big one? Is this the big one? Oh, dear. You know, they aren't prepared for it. They think the big one is never going to happen. It's out there in La La Land. But I was amused to see them now panicking over a 3.5 earthquake. 112 people already dead down in the little town there in Puebla, which, you know, the buildings fell on them and didn't just shake their dinner table. Anyway, that's my rant on the earthquake thing. Hey, look at image 47, the situation with Harvey in Houston and surrounding areas. Now, I'd said to Holly when the hurricane was happening down there and the flooding was occurring, I said, you know, look at what happened around here in sleepy little Pueblo West where we live. we had a windstorm here six, 7 months ago, and it loosened some tiles on our roof, and on some of the other roofs it took off, you know, great sections of the tiles, but still left the roof intact. And it bent a few sign, you know, street signs over to the right and down to the ground, the metal ones, and a couple of flagpoles got bent over like that. So, you know, it wasn't anywhere near the impact that the hurricane would have. But, okay, we thought, well, we'll call the insurance company. We see we had a few tiles missing. So we called them the next day and said, okay, let's get this started. We were among the smart ones because we got our thing fixed within a few weeks. The guys that we talked to were booked out until the end of this month, and that's from back in, like, May, June, before they could get to some of the houses around us. And there weren't that many damage, but it takes a lot of work to get a crew up there, rip the old roof off, and put a new one on. And I looked at Houston, and I thought, dang, well, first of all, they've got to get crews in to build the houses again because the houses are destroyed. I mean, you take all the sheetrock off, maybe the brick and the framework will be good in a lot of the places. But you got to deal with the damp. It's got to be dried out, and any mold that may have formed. You got to have people to do that. And this article I linked to is a CNBC videotape and article, written article about, you know, what is happening down there. They're calling for, you know, home construction people, roof building people, all kinds of workmen that they need. And when you look at the thousands of homes that were damaged, it is so many more and so much more damage than we experienced here in our neighborhood. And we had, you know, people waiting like 3 or 4 months to get a crew out to fix them. What are they going to do in Houston? You got to have garbage removal because all that rotting junk in the front yard has been taken out of the homes and stuff that's still in homes hasn't been taken out. You got to find a place to dump it all because they don't normally throw away all the furniture and junk that they had to because of the hurricane. And you got to have a garbage dump set up for that because the old ones just couldn't handle the load, I'm sure. So it's a labor shortage that is really critical down there. And it needs people from the rest of the United States and wherever we can get them, you know, qualified, construction workers and various types of people for roofing and things and plumbing to go down there and help the reconstruction of Houston. It's going to take years before some people even see a crew to rebuild or repair their homes. It just struck me as I was watching all this stuff that, you know, the earthquake down in Puebla, that, you know, they really are suffering down there. But Houston, I think, on a greater scale, is suffering a lot more. And although they've got some labor force down there in Mexico to take care of that problem, they don't have the numbers that we need up here at the moment. And I just... I'm sorry for the people in Houston and in Florida as well that have been damaged by all this, and little island chains, you know, that have been wiped clean in the path of Irma. But,
and
yeah,
Stan, reading the article you have linked there, they have a president of a construction company, Leslie King, who says, you know, we were busy before, now it's just crazy. We have many homeowners begging to have you come out to their house. You have to tell them it likely will be a couple of years, according to her, like you just said. And they said over 30,000 homes were destroyed in the city by the flooding that Hurricane Harvey caused. And that's a lot of homes. And I've also been reading reports out of the Florida Keys, some places in South Florida, and in places in Houston, that there are still places with power off. Some gas stations, especially in South Florida and the Keys, continue to run out of gas. There's not a good restocking of food supplies in some of these areas. And it's like the media attention was so big on these storms, hyping up the storms and the damage that they're going to do. But after Hurricane Harvey did its damage and Irma was in the path, the news media completely abandoned everything about Harvey and Houston and the victims there. And moved on, and it hasn't really come back into the news since. And then you have all these charitable organizations collecting all these hundreds of millions of dollars, and none of it ever goes to the actual victims.
You know, with one exception, and folks, and I don't mean one exception, Coach Dave Dobmeyer.
And there's an article from the Washington Times yesterday that said how Christians were putting FEMA to shame in these areas.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, you have some of these, news celebrities of sorts that have been collecting money for that relief and then putting it toward activist programs that have nothing to do with hurricane relief. I just find that sad, really sad. It kind of destroys your faith in what human nature should be, at least in this country. Just gone to the dogs.
You know, Stan, just take a step backward here, if you don't mind, if you can humor me in this question. I know what you said throughout the program today. I know what Dane Wigington said yesterday. But a lot of people are still asking the question, and I'll just toss this out there. The hurricanes that we're seeing, are these man-manipulated, man-made? I don't know how else to expand on the questions that I'm getting except to ask that. I guess that's the essence of the questions that we're getting, just to clarify.
Well, you know, it'd be easy to say, oh, yeah, they're man-made or man-steered. I don't know. I don't have enough evidence to tell you one way or the other. But I will tell you that global, you know, engineering of the dirt, the seas, and the atmosphere, whether intentional or not, does change our weather pattern. Now, once a big hurricane starts, there are known ways to cool one side of the hurricane so that it pulls to that side and you can steer it under certain circumstances. And dry ice, you know about that, you could drop dry ice on it, was one of the standard methods. But can something like HAARP, you know, in Alaska, or the Chinese equivalent or the Russian equivalent, can that cause a hurricane? I seriously doubt it. But once a hurricane, or sorry, once a tropical storm, a low-pressure depression starts, they may be able to steer it. But the amount of energy to create, you know, a hurricane is so huge that I think if they were pumping that much energy into the ionosphere that the sky would glow day and night. It's just a huge okay. amount of energy.
Yeah, and that makes sense. Exploiting, and it's kind of the same thing they do with the with politics. They exploit the what's already there. So yeah, I can see that taking place. But to what end? I guess would be my question.
Well, ideally, you would steer hurricanes away from your coastal
right.
areas where it's going to do damage.
Right.
But otherwise, it could be weather warfare. You know, let's look at Putin. I mean, there's one of my bosses on that Tonight Show story covering his war games in, you know, the western side of Russia up close to Europe. And the name of the war game in Russian, I forget what the actual name is, but it means Operation West. Now, is that a westward move, or we're going after the Western nations, or has it just been named that just to go to, you know, the United States and Europe? But he knows how to use weather warfare. We know how to use weather warfare. The Chinese know how to use it. You know, there are a number of other countries that are starting to play at it in local regions, but the three great superpowers have enough equipment and technology that they can make severe changes to the weather over periods of time. If they all try to do it at the same time, as I've said before, if they're using electromagnetic radiation, if they're using warming of certain parts of the ocean or land by some, you know, microwave burst or whatever, if they're all doing it but not in concert, the results are going to be unpredictable. And because Russia is fairly protected from, you know, like seacoast waters and stuff, it's fairly locked in. It's safe from the huge coastal hurricanes and stuff like that, but not safe from tornadoes and, you know, storms that are created over seas but move inland over them. However, the most damage is when we get a hurricane like we've had, or several like we're having now. Did they do it? Did someone do it? I don't know.
Okay.
And they have a treaty. They
yeah.
made a treaty in the 70s, you know, that was finally ratified in 1980 to stop weather warfare between Russia and the United States. Didn't include China, but anyway.
And I find that, you know, what I find the people who deny the existence or the capabilities, I mean, the treaty itself should be Exhibit A for the capabilities, for verification of the capabilities.
And it's no secret. It's on the government website. You can read the treaty yourself.
Right. Right. And I know that if memory serves me, that might have been one of the very first topics. I might have to go back through my program notes when you first came on. I remember that being one of the very first topics we talked about, or very early on. And I was surprised because you were the first person that that alerted me to the fact that there was a treaty.
You know, I first wrote about that in 1978 in the Cosmic Conspiracy, and that was 2 years before the treaty was ratified, but I knew it was coming because of the stuff that was printed in the papers in 1977 and 72. So it was a long-range guess, but certainly it's come true.
Man, okay. Wow.
You know,
it's amazing.
There's a, if people want to look at image 48 later, or just for a brief moment now, you can see all those tectonic plates I was talking about, and little white arrows show which way they're moving, to give you a better idea about changes that are coming up toward California and the Baja. The tectonic plates there are moving kind of sideways, you know, up and down to each other, and splitting apart down in the Pacific to Cocos region. So we've got a very complex set of movements in the tectonic plate from the Baja, I don't know, into Washington, which is in this particular map, but just for your notification, you can use that thing and have a look at it. There's something else going on in the Middle East. You know, almost about 2 weeks ago, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, sneaked over, secret visit to Netanyahu in Israel, and they have a talk, and then MBS goes somewhere else. Nobody knows exactly the terms of the talk, but then now, this week, the head, or the king now, he's not the emir any longer, he's the king, they've changed it to a king, King Hamad bin Isa of Bahrain, has drafted a treaty with five main points. When I say a treaty and agreement, it's called the Bahrain Declaration on Religious Tolerance, and that the Arab nations have now come together to say, look, we're going to stop boycotting and being mean to Israel. We're going to be friends with them, right? Well, now, looking at slide 39, there's a story there. It's a video actually you can watch after the show. It's a prophecy alert by Paul Begley, and it's entitled Iran Threatens to Turn Tel Aviv and Haifa into Dust. Now, that's Iran. Well, Saudi Arabia hates Iran, too. In fact, most of the sensible Arab countries, you know, are afraid of Iran and want to get rid of it because it's a terrorist-type organization. And so in the efforts to get rid of Iran, Saudi Arabia has, for the last 2 years, had formed a 34-nation consortium and an army between them of Arab countries that are against Iran. And hence also Syria. Now, to stop Iran's threat to Israel, the Saudis have gone over to Netanyahu and said, okay, look, here's what we're doing. We're going to be friends. You've been over our country. America's selling its weapons. And it's all a happy family here. And we're getting together to be between you and Iran and Syria so they can't harm you. Well, that sounds like a good deal, everybody says. But then you... you read the details, for instance, of the Bahrain Declaration, and you go to slide 41 and see what King Hamad said. And in the article, I'm just going to go down here, the 5 points they make: religious faith and expression, freedom of choice, the determination of God's will, religious rights and responsibilities, and the hope of faith. Now, it all sounds good. In the 5 points extracted from the paper, they use the word God and not Allah. And the four of these things sound pretty good until you get to number four, religious rights and responsibilities. We acknowledge that God expects more of those in positions of spiritual and temporal authority, and people of all faiths should be accorded the right to congregate, to worship, educate, celebrate, and practice the requirements of their respective faith. Now, unless you're familiar with the Quran, you're not going to realize that practicing the requirements of the Quran, of Islamic faith, means to do away with Israel and the United States, the people of the book, the Christians and Jews. That's practicing the requirements of their respective faith. This is not worded well, and it's done so, I'm sure, kind of, you know, to lull people into saying, oh, this is a good deal. But it's not. It's what it doesn't say. that is, you know, a warning to Israel and the United States. This consortium of Arab nations, it's going to be the Psalm 83 war or something. There's something forming there.
That's very interesting, and I'm reading through this now, Stan, and I don't know, you've had your, you've been paying attention to specifically Saudi Arabia, the Saudi princes, and this area for a long time, and things to watch from these areas, and it's pretty interesting to see this going on, but you're saying that this is not a good deal like they're making it out to be.
No. I think it's going to be a chess move on the part of Saudi Arabia and the allied Arab nations. Bahrain is a very rich country, and they've, you know, become friends with the Saudi prince, and the Saudi prince is now to the point where he needs to have control of the country, and his father is fixed to abdicate, so the Saudi prince, Mohammed bin Salman, is locking up people, you know, getting rid of people as well in his country that would be a thorn in his side when he takes formal power of Saudi Arabia. Now, he's got this army, this consortium of 34 nations, and they've done practice drills together and, you know, warfare and stuff, you know, pretend warfare. If they go over between Israel and Iran towards Syria so that they can take their force in to get rid of the threat from Iran and Syria, if they do, they're going to run into the Russian presence there, but because they're on the ground, the Saudis and their air forces are on the ground there, it'll be somewhat like telling Russia, you're in trouble, just like you were in Afghanistan. You know, we're either going to block you or send you home. So there'll be a little bit of a stalemate as the Saudi allied forces move that way. But it's only a left turn through Jordan, you know, in the tip of Syria, a left turn into Israel, and they're there on the ground. Now, you know, I'm sure that the Defense Department in Israel are aware of the possibility of this, but remember how many thousands of years the Arabs and the Israelis have been at odds with each other over property. And it's not going to go away with a little handshake. And remember also that the Arabs are notorious liars and deceivers. And their religion, the Islamic nations, it's okay to lie to promote Islam.
Taqiyya.
So that's why I'm worried about this.
That's what they call it. The taqiyya is what gives them the permission to do that. And yeah, there was just an article today. I'm not sure. I don't remember where I saw it, but it was a jihadi giving an interview about Western culture and how he said it's so easy to lie and manipulate the people of the Western world.
Invade.
And Randall Terry talks about the,
I mean, we are under assault, under full attack in the West. And, Stan, I was at a conference in, Branson, Missouri this past week, and I was speaking with someone who said, from England, and he said, you know, he was just over in, Western Europe. And I don't recall the country. It wasn't Sweden. It was, I was over there, but he said most of Europe is lost to what's taking place, you know, with the alien invasion. And I just found it sad. And he said it's coming here. He said I can see it clear as day. It's coming to America. It's already mostly here, but it's
amazing. I know. Well, you know, the West is going to pay for its sleepiness. You know, the Crusades of, you know, the 12th, 13th centuries, whatever, they never really finished the job. And so the Islamic nations and the Christian nations have been at odds, kind of on slow boil, you know, until this century or last century and this century. And the increase in the animus between them has been obvious. And to fuel the Arab side or the Muslim side of the attacks, you know, the Crusade, they had all the oil, and they were selling it and getting rich overnight after World War II. They just blossomed into a superpower of money. Now, that's what we're facing now, is the conflict. And the Western world, most people are still worrying about their rights over this or that, and whether they're going to have, you know, a good 401k when they retire, and they're asleep. They're not realizing how incredibly dangerous our situation is. And in Europe, of course, course, smaller countries, but, you know, a lot of landmass, but smaller countries, they're painfully aware of the fact when these, you know, illegal immigrants coming from the Arab nations are coming through there, like from Syria and stuff, they're painfully aware of how they don't mix well with the Western culture and the fact that they are coming in to disrupt their countries. And, you know, you would think over here, if you had a population in the United States that was really seriously wanting to preserve America and the Christian nation, the Judeo-Christian ethnic, that they would stop the illegal immigration. It's too late now. Too many of them already got in, but they would have done that. And instead, you have half of the country that are being led by liberal socialists that are just destroying the country, doing insane things. And I'm sure other countries in the world and the West are looking at the United States and thinking, what's wrong with you people? Can't you see what's happening in Europe and it's happening to you? Wake up. And
exactly.
It's like nobody's listening.
You know, as I traveled, and this, again, and I, pardon me for referencing my travels so much, but I seem to learn a lot. You know, the further south and into the Bible Belt that you go, the less tolerance for any of this progressive mindset, intellectual bankrupt crap that we've got, there is down there, I should say. In other words, the people understand that they're real people. I mean, they're the real people, as opposed to these morons, these mindless morons in the cities, inner cities of like New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco. There is a definite there's a definite difference, and of course, you know, you might say, well, boy, that's an enlightening statement. But the fact is, what I see, Stan, is this deepening and ever widening rift that I think that we're going to have to address, or will be addressed, or forced upon us here in short order. There's less tolerance on the conservative side, and there's even lesser tolerance on the progressive side. And I can see the sparks flying already between the two. I don't know.
Yeah. It was about 1996 or 97, maybe it was. It was 96, probably. Holly and I were invited up to the Hopi to visit with them. We were on another issue with some earthquake research and stuff, but they said, look, come see us. And they told us at that time that there was going to be an invasion of the United States by Russia and China and one Middle Eastern country. They couldn't name that one. But they said they will tear America apart for a short time and destroy much of it. But they will come at a time when America is weak from within because of civil war between various factions, you know, white against black, Jew against, Muslim, and Muslim against Christian and Jews, and Puerto Ricans against this one and that one. He just did a bunch of things when he told us. But basically, it's what we're seeing now, a complete mess of various polarities within our population fighting each other. And the riots are only the thin end of the wedge. It's going to get worse. And probably to the point that the president is going to have to declare martial law in various areas to try to put a lid on it. It won't work, but while we're fighting inside our country, while we've been hit by these hurricanes and possibly some earthquakes that are coming up, you know, we're going to be basically ripe for the taking by the Russians and the Chinese. And the Middle Eastern country that comes with them, I wouldn't be surprised if it's Saudi Arabia, but it could be anybody. They all hate us over there, and we're at that point.
Exactly. And yeah, in terms of the geopolitics, you've laid it out, and you mentioned your book, Cosmic Conspiracy. I think you were way ahead of your time with that book. You still have that book available, that title, at your store?
I do.
Okay.
You know, I'm sure the good Lord led me to put the things in that book that are there, because I'm not a good writer. I might be an author, but I'm, you know, a poor writer. But it started, that book started after I was revealed, you know, what I'd done was revealed to the public through a television documentary in Channel 9 in Perth in 1977. And because of that, a book company said, you got to write a book. But I remember driving up to the station to do the first show, you know, for the release of the interview they did with me. And I had been praying, you know, that everything is going to, you know, be right with what I say for the Lord's work and ever. and I felt this warm thing like honey start at the base of my skull, right where the little dent on your spine is there, you know, where your head joint, and it flowed down my back and into my shoulders, a great calming feeling as though, you know, something was settling in my body. And I'm pretty sure it was the Spirit of the Lord, because after that, of course, when I got, you know, the publishing company wanted me to write the book and everything, the book Cosmic Conspiracy resulted from that. So the things that are in there are the things that the good Lord pointed me to that would be important, not only then, but now, particularly, and in the next few months, about what's going to happen as far as the world government. On page 200, I haven't changed the first 200 pages of the Cosmic Conspiracy ever. I've just added things to the end. And on page 200, there's a map of the world being divided up into 10 regions, just like it's spoken of in the prophecies, that a world government will form, and there will be 10 nation states, and they list the countries that will be in each one. And that was published, you know, in 1976, 77 by the Club of Rome. I forget the exact date, but it was before I wrote my book, and I was able to put it in the book. And I did meet Dr. Pache, the head of the Club of Rome, briefly in Melbourne, you know, before I wrote the book. So I'm telling you that these things that were chance or quote-unquote accidents weren't. And so if you're finding things in that book that are, you know, amazingly accurate this far down the road for what's happening now, it's because the good Lord put them there.
Okay.
Amen. And there are. I mean, the Cosmic Conspiracy.
We're in such a mess at the moment on the whole planet.
There you go. Yep.
That people are really, they've really lost faith in their established government. In Europe, you can see how the heads of the various European countries, you know, have failed their people by letting the illegal immigrants, these refugees, come through and settle in their countries and virtually destroy them. And so the people of these countries are thinking, you know, what do we elect these people to do? What are they doing sitting on their thumbs? They're not protecting us. Anybody, you know, Blind Freddy can see this isn't a good idea. And so the people of Earth are getting more and more dissatisfied with the leadership of the planet. You know, we're at the verge of a nuclear war over the Rocket Man issue. And we're, you know,
Rocket
at the verge
Man, yes.
of the Rocket
Sorry.
Man. I think that was so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, he must have laughed when they were writing his speech about that, because, yeah, that's that Rocket Man, that works for me.
Yeah, me as well.
And Schumer come in saying, oh, that was belittling. He shouldn't have said that. You know, I'm thinking, oh, no, he should have. We're dealing with a clown, armed with nuclear weapons, mind you, but still a clown. But here we have the threat of nuclear war. We have weather catastrophes that are increasing. It's impacting our various countries that grow produce and sell it all over the planet. In the wake of what's happening in Houston and in Florida, we're probably going to see a rash of various diseases, you know, that will be spread by mosquitoes and by dirty water and things like that for a few months or years, which will be, you know, quite sad, but it's part of the pestilences that will occur. People are unhappy with that. People are going to be unhappy with their economy more so than they are now, especially when the economy collapses, when the share market collapses, the whole world's going to know about it. People are afraid of that and seeing that coming in, you know, the various economic reports that are being published now. And, you know, like Bitcoin is under attack and people that have gone off into these digital currencies could be losing it all. You know, financial, weather warfare, nuclear warfare, food depletions, possible pandemics that may start out of, you know, like cholera stuff that may start out of these natural disasters. And, you know, population migrations, like we're seeing illegal immigrants all over the world, not just here. These major curves are driving people of Earth, the people, not the leadership, but the people, to say, can anyone solve the problem? And when I wrote The Cosmic Conspiracy, I wrote it knowing that there would come a time like this, and that the people would be led by these engineered crises to adopt a one-world government from an institution that has no political or religious or cultural bias. It comes from off the planet type thing. And that is the great deception, I think, that Jesus was speaking of in Matthew. 2000 conspiracy was to warn people about that in our day, in our time, not to be fooled by this, not to, to run to the nearest alleged solution to the planet's problems.
You know, if I can do this, I don't know, Stan, we haven't talked about this before, and it's up to you, but for those who don't have Cosmic Conspiracy, if you order it, Stan, if you tell me from this program, just somehow mention that, you know, you're ordering it because of this program, I'd be happy to send the first five people who order your book, Cosmic Conspiracy, which is relevant today. I will send a free copy of my book, Stand by Blood, to them if they would like it. So, I mean, I don't know.
All right.
Stan,
all right.
If you
well,
want to.
Yeah, I'll, so if they just stay in there, what they order the Cosmic, can you give them a free copy of your book? Or?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. So, if they order Cosmic Conspiracy, your book, I've got five books left of the last printing right now in my office.
Right.
So if they
order. Of your book, right?
Yes, right. Stained by Blood. So what right. I would gladly do, if you send me the names of five people and how they want, like if they want me to sign it or personalize it to, you know, whom or to who they want me to write, I'll send them a free copy. They don't have to
right.
ship it.
First
five
we'll
people of Cosmic Conspiracy. So, I mean, it's, you know, so yeah, take advantage of that, folks. It's, I'll tell you, the Cosmic Conspiracy is an eye-opener. But and it's relevant today as well. So, but I just want to do that because I think it's important that people have this book, read it, and have it in their library.
All right, all right.
So, all right.
Boy, it's all coming to pass. It seems to be so fast, eh?
Well, now, what's happening on the 23rd? Just real.
Well,
real
the
quickly.
Sign will be there. I mean, the alignment of the three planets, Mercury, Mars, Venus, will be in the constellation of Leo. I've read some guy's article, you know, disputing the fact that it's a sign because that astronomers don't really know how many stars are in the constellation of Leo, which is absolute rubbish, because the nine stars that are there are what you could see with the naked eye and what the ancients saw with the naked eye. And when they said there's going to be a, you know, three new bright light stars, which are three planets, that will appear in those nine stars they could see in Leo. And the moon will be right at the foot of Virgo, the Virgin right next to that, and that there would be, the sun would be on her left shoulder, you know, clothing her in light. You know, these things were all forecast properly in the Revelation, John Revelation 12. And so the 23rd of September is when this alignment is coming, and there's no disputing that. And it's a sign that was mentioned in Revelation 12. And obliquely in a couple of other places in the writings of the Old Testament. But what's going to happen? Well, that sign will be there. Does it mean that we're going to have a judgment of the United States or the world start at that time or a couple of days or months thereafter or even between now and then? I don't know. We just know that it's a critical sign to watch because big things are going to be happening on the world as far as, you know, countries against countries and leadership and that kind of stuff. Personally, I think that it may herald the crises that I'm talking about, where we will see the arrival toward the end of the year of the quote unquote aliens, which will be Satan and his minions posing as our elder brothers from space. But they won't come; they won't reveal themselves until these crises are life threatening to everybody, every man, woman, and child on the planet, that's frightened of nuclear war, radiation, that kind of stuff. So the 23rd of September, I think, is the sign that it's about to start. Now, what, you know, it's anybody's guess. Certainly some theories say that the rapture of the church will occur around that time. May well do. And, you know, my bags are packed if it's going to happen then. But if it doesn't, that's fine. I'm just saying that it is a marker beacon that was given to us 2,000 years ago. Well, a little bit less, but about 2,000 years ago. To let us know that this time would come, and we're there. And so we know sometime around that sign appearing that the seven-year tribulation spoken of in the Bible will start, and that means fairly soon.
Very interesting. And that's, you know, hey, God made the heavens and the earth, and he put the stars and planets up there for our, what, as...
for signs.
The time marker.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not, and don't confuse that, folks, with astrology. It's not. It's just, it's not astrology. It's
a time map that can't be altered by mankind. The stars are fixed for for those purposes. You can't get up and alter them.
Exactly.
So the names of those stars in the constellation, all those names in the 12 major constellations have meanings that tell the story of that period in the human development and the human progress. Another thing that means probably nothing, but in slide 46, I found an article yesterday that the moon hid or occluded the three planets that are going to be in the lineup of this September 23rd thing. The three stars, Mercury, Venus, and Mars, are planets, but those are the three bright lights that will move into position in Leo to form the 12 stars, the crown of the woman spoken of in Revelation 12. So is there any meaning to the moon hiding them for yesterday for a short period of time, and then they spring out of that, you know, and they take their position where they should be in the Leo formation in 4 days? It's going to be interesting.
Interesting, yeah. Indeed.
Yeah, absolutely, it will be. And
You know, that picture right there, when was that?
I think that's from last night. That's what Stan's talking about with the moon.
Okay.
Yeah, if you click on the article, you'll see that it was yesterday.
I got to tell you something, okay? And the true story, Stan, and you guys can laugh all you want.
We will.
Okay. It was, we stopped in St. Louis. I was in St. Louis yesterday morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. 4:30 in the morning. I went outside the hotel to get something for my vehicle. Okay, 4:30 a.m. I looked in the sky and I saw that exact thing.
You saw the crescent moon with the stars?
Absolutely.
Right, yeah.
And
it was real close yesterday.
There's two things I know how to do with my cell phone now. I know how to turn it on, and I know how to use it as a camera. I'm a little iffy on calling, but that aside. I took that picture. I took a picture just like that with my cell phone. And when my wife woke up, I showed her. I said, "Look at this." And she was underwhelmed. But I was overwhelmed. I'm telling you, Stan, I looked at that and I thought, wow. Anyway.
Well, that picture that's on that article there is over Kyiv in the in Ukraine.
Okay.
And Venus was just above the moon just before they took this. But Mercury, Mars, and Venus were hidden within a few hours right behind the moon. And I don't know what the heck that would mean, but it's just an odd coincidence.
Interesting.
Beautiful, though. You got a good shot of that, eh?
No, look, my cell phone is, I don't know, it's old, relative. So the camera is kind of old.
Right.
So it's grainy. The picture that I took is grainy. But that's exactly, not the definition, the moon, it was more of a sliver. You can see some definition on the globe there, or on the top.
Right.
It wasn't as defined as that.
So maybe one of your listeners can tell us what they think that means from Scripture. I have no idea, but again, it's not a common occurrence for those three planets anyway.
Man, that's... Wow. I'm excited that you mentioned this, because...
there's been a reason for it.
Yeah, you know, when I looked up, and I just... Something about that just struck me. I need to take a picture of this. And anyway. Oh.
Well, we'll find out, I guess. You'll have a picture of it.
Yeah. Say, see?
You know, I had a couple of lightweight articles up at the top of the page there in slides 49 and 51. 51 is interesting in that with those little white things you see in that guy's hand with a wire attached are artificial muscles. And the article goes on to tell you the details about it. But they're three times stronger than human muscle, and looking at developing this stuff, because it only takes 8 bolts to make it contract and lift many times its own weight. You know, in the article it tells you all the details of that, but its strain density, you know, the expansion of it is 15 times greater than a natural muscle. It can lift 1,000 times its own weight. Now they're going to put that into robots into human-like robots, you know, facial muscles, expressions, things like that, so that they are what they call analog movements. They're not digital, you know, rough, chunky movements. They're going to be smooth. And so we're well on the way to creating artificial looking humans that really do behave physically anyway like a human body. Just one step further to the changing of humanity. Maybe they'll make bodies like that where they will take people's consciousness or something and stuff them into them. At least that's their plan.
Well, they're definitely working hard toward that goal, Stan, with all the robotics that we see now. And then they have, you know, the sex robots and that whole industry. It's getting kind of crazy. And I read the article that you have on the show images page, and that's an interesting article. As you said, lifting 1,000 times its weight. I think that's something that we need to take note of, because when we talk about super soldiers, if they're creating these things,
yeah,
what purposes would they create them for?
To be soldiers.
Yeah.
Again, too. Another thing, just a minor kind of, you know, light kind of thing. You know, all this political correctness about profiling and stuff like that. Image 49. It's from an article where they have developed artificial intelligence that will take a two-dimensional picture from your iPhone or something, your flat picture, and it will then turn it into a 3D model of your face. And on the site, they have an animation. You can see that guy's picture, and then they rotate it around and show you in 3D that an artificial intelligence looked at that flat picture and said, ah, this guy has to have these depths and these figures, you know, for his face. Now, they would have looked at him out of logic. They would have to say, well, the man is of the Negroid races. His nose structures will probably be no more than this far out from his face. And the eye spacing, you know, the ears will structure like this. And they'll take key dimensions of average Negroid features and then white features or, you know, Indian features, you know, or Chinese. And they'll have to use these profiling factors in the equation they've used to make it work for all kinds of people's photographs, to then extract that into a three-dimensional image. I think the technology is great, but I had to laugh because to get away with this, they're going to have to racially profile in their artificial intelligence. Strange, but true.
Stan, you've taken us to the end of the show. Fantastic hour, and we thank you so much for your time. And say hi to Holly.
I'll do it, guys. God bless you now.
God bless you, Stan. And don't forget, the first five copies of Cosmic Conspiracy Order from Stan Dale. Stan, you can send me an email with their names, addresses. I will send them a free copy, shipping included, of Stained by Blood. All I need to know is where to send it and how to address it if they want their signed copy. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All righty. Night-night now.
All right. Folks, thanks for joining us. Catch my program starting at 9 o'clock in the morning tomorrow on the Global Star Radio Network and BTR. Joe's program and John's program at what time again?
2 to 3.
I know. 2 to 3. And then meet us back here tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, for the Hagman Report. I got to tell you, we are fired up. It is a new day, new mandate. We're ready to rock. God bless you. Until tomorrow.